at the age of 16 years old that something wasn't quite right. I came out to my family and started undergoing therapy at 17 years old. 18 years old, I started hormones, and here we are. And it means a lot to me just because of the experiences that I have had with opposition to my gender, particularly in bathrooms, and even more so, I've been fired from jobs for being transgender. I've, you know, witnessed all kinds of discrimination just based on my gender identity.
Peyton, we're going to leave it here because this is the end of the show. We just got you up. We're sorry we weren't able to get that satellite a little before, but we're going to continue this conversation and post it online at democracynow.org. Peyton McGarry, thanks so much for being with us, plaintiff in the federal lawsuit filed against North Carolina and Chase Strangeau of the ACLU. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. We're looking for your help to subvert the spring drive. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us raise $25,000 before the start of the pledge drive. If we make that goal, we'll take a day off the drive. Better still, if you donate now until April 21st, you'll be entering in our spring sweepstakes drawing. Prizes include two VIP passes to this year's Waterfront Blues Festival, win gift certificates to Revolution Hall and Mississippi Studios, or be entered to win our grand prize of $1,000 in airfare to go anywhere you want. Rules and prizes can be found at kboo.fm/2016 Spring Sweeps. No purchase necessary to be entered in the sweepstakes. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today we'll examine the state of American discourse.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Problem with Privilege, a four-week class hosted by the Portland Underground Grad School starting April 4th at 6:30 p.m. This class is for those who want to name and correct liberal racism, who want to understand and interrupt isms, and who want to be a powerful ally and take on race issues and white fragility without co-opting the issues. Again, that's The Problem with Privilege, a four-week class hosted by the Portland Underground Grad School starting April 4th at 6:30 p.m. at Hatch, 2420 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. Information on how to register for the class and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the film screening of Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths on Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center in Portland. The film will be introduced by Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. There will also be a Q&A session after the film. Again, that's a screening of the film, Firefighters, Architects, Engineers, Expose 9/11 Myths with Richard Gage, Saturday, April 2nd, at the Portland State University Lincoln Performance Center, 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Climate Change Tools for Faith Communities, a workshop led by Tim DeChristopher, Saturday, April 9th, starting at 10 a.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. During this day-long workshop, Sewell Lecture Speaker Tim DeChristopher will share integrated and multi-faith strategies to prevent climate change and environmental injustice, combat poverty, and restore dignity to both people and the planet. Again, that's a Climate Change Tools for Faith Communities, a workshop led by Tim DeChristopher, Saturday, April 9th at 10 a.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
One, two, three. never meant words. I speak things so loud and clear, you got to believe every word you heard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I didn't sleep well last night.
Oh yeah?
No.
Well, that's not good.
Well,
should we just cancel the show? Thanks, everybody.
Well, good night. Oh, good day.
Yes. Wow, you're out of it, man.
I'm really out of it.
The sun is shining. Okay. It's a beautiful morning.
It is a beautiful morning. Yeah. It's almost like nice.
I'd say it is nice.
Well, almost. A little frost out there.
Yeah, you're just never satisfied.
No, I'm not. Okay.
This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. Today we're going to talk about, and I'm sure you've noticed this because it's pretty hard to ignore, the rather dark turn that the American political discourse has taken during this election cycle. We've seen outbreaks of political violence at rallies for a certain Republican frontrunner candidate.
Huge.
And it's entirely possible, but before this is all done, somebody might get killed.
Oh, no. Don't say that.
Well, that's possible. I think we need to admit that. In any event, some might call this behavior, this speech that we're seeing, particularly amongst white conservatives these days, as proto-fascist or bordering on fascist or fascistic. Choose your adjective. But here to explain why this is so, and I might add, quoting from an article he wrote more than 20 years ago, Mr. Joe Uris.
Yeah. Thank you. No, I in 1992, I realized that there needed to be something said about what were clear tendencies in our political discourse and in our political behavior. And the Oregonian at that time, the editors in the op-ed page, which is the page traditionally opposite the official editorials. Those editors were not unfriendly to me, and they would let me write pieces and pay me for them, and I liked that.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
Getting paid is good.
So I wrote this thing on Thursday, May 7th, 1992. Now, just to put that in context, all the terribles that have gone down since then had not yet gone down.
That's true.
So, you know, I like this because I was, I like it when I can predict things.
So this was, did this come out before the election of 92?
May,
okay. Sure. So this is the waning days of the H.W. Bush presidency.
Yes, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll read you some stuff. A reactionary or right-wing, and this is an explanation, a right-wing totalitarian system of centralized government, fascism, is based on an alliance of wealthy industrialists, landholders, the military, and angry members of the middle and lower classes. By the way, we don't use the term lower classes anymore. We don't even use the term working classes. Everybody is presumed now somehow to be in the middle classes, which are sinking.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I think that's very funny. All right. Anyway, middle and lower classes. It appears when legitimacy of the government is questioned, when the state cannot solve the problems of society and law and order collapse. Fascism gains power by promising to restore discipline and harmony. It delivers on this promise at the expense of individual freedom. Janus-like, fascism simultaneously romanticizes the past and the future. It promises a return, and this is really relevant right now to the Republican contest, a return to of a kind of pristine purity of American life, in this case, a shiny future that is only tarnished with blood. But fascism does give hope, meaning, and purpose, three items that are in short supply today. The leadership of both major parties reeks of corruption and scandal, from Iran-Contra to the looting of the savings and loans. The men at the top appear incompetent, selfish, and dishonest. Instead of dealing with the real issues, politicians are making scapegoats of everyone from black people to welfare recipients to anyone else. And I want to just remind everybody, because it's easy to forget, that Bill Clinton destroyed the welfare system. And in doing so, he put many, many millions of children into direct poverty. And this produced an underclass that is still with us. Mm-hmm. And I think we tend to forget these things. We're not very good at remembering our own history. But it's really important. Blaming the victim, creating a class of others, was a key strategy of European fascists like Adolf Hitler, who attacked, in that case, Jews, communists, and homosexuals. And in America today, many are swallowing similar bait, as seen by rising hate crimes, black anti-Semitism, which is a thing and real, growing anti-Asian sentiment, and other forms of racism. As problems develop, a silent form of class warfare appears. Laws to control the crimes of the poor become more harsh. Already one in every 260 people in America is in prison. Now, this is 92. It's gotten worse since then. The crucial watchdog of American life, the mass media, is controlled by corporate interests with little concern for anything but the notion that no vocation for journalists is needed. It's simply whether or not it can entertain you. And if you look at local news, if you read local papers, mm-hmm. which are collapsing except for independent ones, if you examine what's going on in the national news media, there's no question about the correctness of the prediction from 92. With the collapse of the Soviet totalitarian system, both the promise and threat of socialism can no longer function as a check or counterbalance to the actions of unenlightened and uncontrolled oligopoly, rule by the power elite of the very wealthy and their supporters in government and the military combine to control the society. Now, this is an issue which is apparently carrying Bernie Sanders' campaign hugely. So I had no idea of that in 92. I mean, that there would be such a person. Angry reactionary pressure... pardon me, pressure groups have already changed the political landscape. What was once the right is now the moderate middle. The one-time middle ground of liberalism has become the far left, and what was once the left is completely unthinkable. As wealth clumps at the top and resources dwindle, as the world environment degrades, and as the good life becomes ever harder to maintain, the middle class disappears. Ironically, if this trend continues, we will see the development of a harsh two-class society, not unlike that which Karl Marx had predicted way, way over 100 years ago. The big questions are not about whether we will have a resurgence of fascism, but rather how obviously totalitarian will it be? Will it come as a shift toward theocratic fundamentalism, a set of constitutional amendments to restrict the Bill of Rights and the power of Congress? And that's one very likely possibility. Or maybe some businessman, and this is really eerie, some businessman will come along on a white horse to run the nation like a giant corporation, from the top down, of course. And what will happen to those who are disgruntled? Will they be fired or fired upon?
Oh, my.
No, I really, 92, I'm kind of proud of this. I'm sorry, it's an ego trip, but it's probably more important that we realize what I was saying then has, in large part, happened.
Yep.
Don't you think?
I do. So, you didn't say that George W. Bush was that businessman coming in to run.
Well, you could say that, and you could say Donald Trump is the end result businessman.
Yeah, that's right.
So huge.
It's huge.
Huge.
So what we're interested in hearing from you today, listeners, is what do you think? Does Donald Trump represent a turn towards the fascist in American political discourse? What's going to happen in terms of ongoing political violence at his rallies? Is somebody going to end up in the hospital? Is somebody going to end up dead? What does this mean as Election Day draws nearer? And I'm sure many of you who are paying attention noticed the fact that a petition circulated recently, garnered tens of thousands of signatures from members of both major parties in an attempt to allow the Republican National Convention to be an open carry convention where delegates on the floor could go in with a pistol strapped to their
head. Well, I favor
or
that.
A rifle slung over
no,
their
no,
shoulder.
No, I am absolutely in favor of the Republican convention allowing everybody to carry AK-47s or their equivalent.
Right. Armed people at a political convention, what could possibly go wrong?
Oh, and I think it's a great idea.
Well, the Secret Service said, no, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, but, you know, what do they know?
Well, they know enough to say, no, it's not going to happen.
I say, free fire zone at the Republican convention.
Bad, bad idea. So 503-231-8187 is the number to call to take part in this conversation. If you'd like to write into the show, you could do that, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or on the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Yeah, so you must be a little bit proud of yourself having predicted.
Well, yeah, I don't want to break my arm patting my back.
Well, no,
but
don't worry.
On the other hand, you know, what's more important than the fact that I thought of this and analyzed the situation and wrote this and got it published, well, perhaps the last part of that at that time, the Oregonian, which was a very conservative newspaper, saw fit to allow me fairly frequently the opportunity to comment on what was going on as a local commentator, a professor, as it were. Mm-hmm. And that's gone. I mean, I suppose I could submit articles to other publications, and some of them are decent, the local publications. Tribune is being one example. But there is no money in it. There's no glory in it. There's no extremely wide readership for it. The print media, in fact, at the national level is lagging and losing. And the tendency for every bit of information is that it moved for infotainment rather than information.
So are you implicating the media in what you perceive to be the rise of fascism in the United States?
Well, I think it has a role to play, and I'm implicating the fact that more and more of the media is corporate, and its direction is not just profit, which is a legitimate idea, but ultra-profit.
I'd like to take a small grammar break here. Are we throwing in the towel on the word media? It is technically a plural noun. Are we just going to use it as in the singular like everybody else does?
I guess.
Okay.
I'm not going to worry about the correctness of my grammar.
That makes me a little bit sad.
Oh.
But so it goes.
Okay.
The media is, not the media are.
Well, I don't know.
All right.
I mean, I'm not even sure what the correct grammar would be. But I don't want to spend time on a grammatical conversation.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. We'd love to hear your opinions on the rise of American fascism. Is it actually fascism? Is what he spouts on the campaign trail actually fascism, Joe?
Well, and of course I believe it is.
Why?
Because he discounts the idea of a balance of powers. He suggests that somehow he, as a quasi-dictator, can force changes in the system that will strengthen an American military-industrial state.
Hmm.
And the central argument that I make is that it's friendly fascism. It is probably not going to come with a knock at everybody's door. That's not necessary. What is happening is if you want to get along, you're going to have to go along.
I see.
And that will be an enormous impactor on our consciousness. We already don't have a discourse in America that includes a wide spectrum of opinion from the left to the right.
That's true. Trump's also a nationalist.
Oh, yeah.
He portrays foreign powers as laughing at us or ripping us off or taking advantage
of us.
Well,
he actually, I mean, I don't want to get into this to any great length, but he actually wants to take apart the order that was created post-World War II that essentially checked Soviet aggression, that essentially created the wealth of modern Europe, something like the German miracle and the French miracle, that he wants to destroy all that for what are not clear reasons.
Hmm.
And it's weird. You know, all of it is super nationalist. All of it is irrational. All of it would involve things like torture and all kinds of bad ideas. Ideas that essentially led us directly into a war in Iraq, which in turn has produced things like ISIS.
That's true. He has explicitly on more than one occasion endorsed waterboarding and said we need to go beyond waterboarding.
Oh, yeah.
That torture does, in fact, work, and that the military is wrong when they claim that torture is ineffective.
Well, I think gouging eyes out always is an effective way of controlling social discourse.
It's an effective way of eliminating someone's eyesight.
Well, yeah.
But I don't know about controlling social discourse.
Yeah. No, I want to hear from people. But we actually have an item that's kind of amazing that maybe we should read.
Let's hang on to that for a
second. Okay, we'll hang on to that, but we'll get to it.
Revolution Livestream writes into the Twitter machine, that's at HonestAbe72, to say, we already live in fascism. Trump has already been buying the government for decades. The election is a hoax so that people can think they are free.
Okay.
You think that's true?
A hoax?
A hoax.
Well, I think it's a highly manipulated environment. If you look at the way the media is treating, Sanders campaign, which is now seems to be gaining momentum and is very, very popular, particularly with younger people, it's in denial about the significance of that. And there's an assumption that there's an anointed candidate of the Democratic Party, and she will be the president of the United States.
The day after Sanders' recent sweep of Hawaii, Alaska, and Washington State, the New York Times reported that story on the front page, but below the fold and directly underneath a huge column on Trump's foreign policy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I'm talking about.
Exactly. One would think that that sweep of three caucus states on one night would be a bigger story.
What we're really doing, what we're really seeing with the media at its best is that it's a manager of reality rather than a reporter of reality.
Stenographer to power, one
exactly.
might say. Let's go to the phones. Francis, good morning. Francis, you're on the air. All right, well, let's come back to Francis if we can. Who else do we have, Steve? David, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call and
sure.
good topics again. You know, regarding the media, of course, our media is tied into the military-industrial complex. And you guys all know about the Eisenhower speech.
Oh, of course.
Warned us.
Yeah, I was almost tempted to play it. It's a little long for our show, but it was right on.
You know, besides the military-industrial complex comment, the first words out of his mouth were he had to thank the TV broadcasters for broadcasting his speech. And since that point, the media has been on lockstep. They control our politicians. That's why you can't win unless you pour millions of dollars into the media for TV coverage. And, you know, just last week it was reported, the Washington Times ran 16 stories that put Bernie Sanders in a bad light. They ran 16 stories. So we know the media is all over this. And if we ever do an invasion of a country, I mean, you and me, where's the first three places we go to? We go to the TV station, we go to the newspapers, and we go to all the media outlets to silence the critics. And so, you know, it's no surprise to me. And, you know, for me, the Trump, for all the bombast, I think there is some nuggets of truth what he says. And the media just crawls over him. That's why he has to get all belligerent. They hate him from the get-go. But remember, we're supposed to be a democratic society, but everyone in the media is throwing him out. How can we prevent him from being the nominee? You know, the Week magazine headlines, how do we stop Trump? I mean, what is that about? That's media trying to play politics again.
Well, the establishment may dislike Donald Trump, but the mainstream media love him because he draws views and he draws clicks and he draws eyeballs. That's why there's been so much more coverage devoted to his campaign.
Well,
the guy is a draw.
They don't want him in there.
No.
They want the old guard, like the Clintons, the Obamas, and the Bushes, who are gonna, you know that that's what they want. They don't want anyone messing with what they got and rocking the boat. Trump represents the birth. Really, I feel he, for all of his stuff, there is nuggets of truth, and he represents the birth of a third party here. He's throwing establishment parties on their heels. They're so afraid of him that all they can do is lash out and say mean things back.
I think
that really he represents finally. I mean, who has ever told the War Hawks, Lindsey Graham and John McCain to go stuff it? He's the only one who's ever said that. He said that Bush and Cheney lied and they messed up the Middle East. I mean, there's definitely stuff that resonates with me, and I don't know. Our greatest supposed president was FDR, right? Or one of the greatest? Well, what did he do? He rounded up the Japanese. So, I mean, it's not out of the pale. The American politicians, we're the youngest government in the world.
Were you blaming FDR for World War II there?
No, he rounded up the Japanese.
Oh, you're talking about domestically. Yeah, that was a terrible thing.
So, right. I mean, we consider him the best thing since sliced bread. And what did he do? And so, you know, we're getting all wrapped up on this bombast. I don't believe Trump's going to do half the things he says, but I do believe in the New York Times, his foreign policy was solid. He's not going to support Saudi Arabia anymore. He's going to let Japan run their own nuclear deterrence. And he really has some really thoughtful comments about the dangers of nuclear war. He's a person who says, I don't just worry about climate change. I worry about a nuclear world climate change. And so no one said that before. I mean, I'm an environmentalist and I'm a liberal, and there are no liberals out there that I can see since, the last 8 years and before. So
okay.
Right. Well, we're going to have to let you go as we've exceeded our arbitrary time limit. Let me ask you one question before you go. Are you leaning towards supporting Mr. Trump?
You know, I told my mother-in-law, if it's between Clinton and Trump, I'm going to vote for the Green Party or no one. But if someone puts a gun to my head, I'll vote for Trump. Clinton, you know, do you know about we overthrew Honduras during her last tenure?
Yeah, that's very
true. We did another coup that no one reads about.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think Trump is going to be playing those silly games. I think he's going to come out and tell people how it is. We don't question where he's coming from. But it's the smiley politicians who grease the skids in the background. They tell you the warm fuzzies, and they do something else. Those are the ones that are scarier for me.
All right, okay, well, thanks for the call. I really couldn't disagree more with that phone call. I think it's very clear where Donald Trump is coming from. A lot of people are questioning that. I don't think his foreign policy is anything approaching solid. He's called for raising a big army, aggressively increasing defense spending, waging an all-out war against ISIS, and he's rattled his saber against nations like China, against the European Union, against Russia. He's expressed admiration for Vladimir Putin as a strong leader. This guy is an autocrat. He has talked openly about using nuclear weapons in the struggle against ISIS.
That all is true, but the weirdest thing about him is he doesn't know diddly.
No, he really
doesn't.
He's
probably the most ignorant candidate we've ever had for president of the United States at this level.
And this is all without even mentioning the fact that he has proposed and doubled down on barring members of a major world faith from entry into the United States of America.
Right, and wants to have troops in neighborhoods where Islamic followers exist.
I think this caller really illustrates the danger of a figure like Trump, the seductiveness of a figure like Trump. You say what you will about him, as the caller noted, he's very upfront and on the table about what he believes and what he plans to do. Mm-hmm. There is not and I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, there is not an aura like the one possessed by Secretary Clinton that causes a lot of people to doubt her motives and to doubt what she's saying.
I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot whatever.
I think I just stepped in it.
Okay.
But let's go back to the phones. Francis, good morning.
Hi. As I have said before, and it's so obvious, the revolution will not be televised. I don't think people realize how big the movement is that has chosen Bernie Sanders as their leader. Now, Donald Trump, I believe, is even surprised with himself as far as his success. And I think he doesn't know what to do with it. I mean, it's all been a show for him and continues to be. That's what he refers to his rallies as shows.
That's true.
Bernie Sanders, I would love to see Bernie Sanders debate Donald Trump. There would be no question. There would be no doubt on who won. Brooklyn versus Queens. It would be beautiful. The media should love that. But I think that this movement, I think they're missing it. I think they're just starting to get wind of it, but I think it's happening anyway. The overwhelming victories in Hawaii and Alaska and Washington should say something, but apparently they don't yet. He's already even, or even a little bit ahead now in Wisconsin, and he's almost even in New York, and I think it's just a matter of time, and then we'll see. And that's the only, you know, as far, I didn't hear your beginning when you spoke of that, what you wrote a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But I believe that that's the only alternative to something like Trump is the people. And as Mr. Sanders said many times, I've just been chosen to be the leader, but this movement is growing and it's continuing, and the people are rising up. And I don't think that media will show us that, but it's happening.
Okay, well, we'll see, so, Francis. I appreciate the call.
And that's the only hope, I believe. It's almost like right now it's love versus hate. Because there are things that Trump says, as far as NAFTA and things like that are right on. So those people who have those feelings about those sorts of programs and things that are going on, they can just join the movement and leave all that hate over there with Trump, and it'll all be good.
Francis, I think that characterization of love versus hate is right on the money.
Right, and it's happening. As Bernie Sanders said, love trumps hate. So, when the little birdie came to see Bernie, you know, the little birdie.
Oh, yeah, wasn't that fantastic?
Oh, wait a minute. I saw on the internet that the bird was mechanical, that it was really a drone.
Oh, yeah,
and it was
right.
All a trick.
Yeah.
My niece was there, and she sent a video to me and what was the most wonderful about that was to hear my niece, her laughter, her joy, as the crowd was just cheering, and my niece was just so happy.
Okay, we're going to let you go.
Beautiful.
Francis, thank you as always for your contribution.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. If you'd like to write in to the Facebook page, you can do so. Abe and Joe, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Brian writes in to say, when fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross.
Famous line.
Yes, Upton Sinclair. Brian adds, also, Drumpf, Cruz, and their ilk, who are so enthusiastic about torture, have never served a day in the military. Like their predecessor, Torquemada Cheney, who'd all make a mess in their Armani trousers if sent to the front.
I appreciate that comment. I have to say that Cruz is the meanest person running for president that I've ever seen. Am I wrong here?
Well, I think Trump gives him a run for his money, but... Yeah, they're both.
They're mean. But no, Cruz looks like it's unbelievable.
You can also write to us on the Twitter at HonestAbe72. This just in: the Supreme Court today, in a case that seemed poised to deal a major blow to public unions, ended in a tie this morning, effectively delivering a big victory to the unions. The court split 4-4 on a conservative legal challenge to a vital source of funds for organized labor, affirming a lower court ruling that allowed California to force non-union workers to pay fees to public employee unions.
That's called fair share.
That's right. The 4-4 decision leaves in place an appeals court ruling in favor of the unions, but sets no new precedent. This just one example of what happens when you don't have a full 9 justices on the Supreme Court, and I guess Exhibit A in how the Republican strategy to not fill that seat has backfired.
Well, it's kind of funny. You know, there is no specified number of members of the Supreme
That's
Court.
That's true. But it's been 9 for a long time. And you recall during Franklin Roosevelt's presidency, he tried to pack the court with several additional justices who were favorable to his policies.
Right, and despite his popularity, it backfired.
It was roundly rejected.
Right.
Let's go back to the phones. Barth, good morning.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks again for stirring up the pot of public opinion and perception.
That's what we do.
And so well. I'd like to comment on our candidate, T. Rump. He is good for business, for the media business, because he's outrageous. And if he gets into power, I think you're going to magnify the fascist tendency that's already there, because business is going to go dump a bunch of money in his pocket and in his supporters' pocket in order to get the things that they want. And so the corporatocracy is going to be magnified even more than it is now, and it's going to be more out front, because that's the way Trump likes to play it. He's out front telling you that he is the leader, he is in charge, people will do what he says. And so I think that's kind of hand in glove with the rise of fascism.
Well, you're probably right. The thing about Trump that makes me kind of amused is that his lack of knowledge in any area of expertise where you would think a president would have it, and his decisions on who to choose as advisors are so horrendous. You have to wonder what really is going on. Is you have a nation of people who are semi-literate, who are ill-informed, and that's not their fault, it's the fault of media, and in fact are very hurting economically and socially. And Trump is just the perfect figure to lead such a situation.
Well, but given that as a support base, some of the other players who have done terrible things politically lately mm-hmm. have been slightly intelligent persons who retained advisors and lackeys that gave them what they wanted or told them what they wanted and manipulated things on a grand scale.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I was amazed that Hillary Clinton referred to Henry Kissinger, I believe it was, mm-hmm. as one of her wise men.
Role models.
Yeah, really.
And you wouldn't want to touch the comment about the aura around Clinton, but I'm not afraid.
Not the greatest choice of words on my part.
I think it's largely a matter of right-wing attacks over a long period of time.
Well, I think there's two things going on. I think there are really questionable attacks on the Clintons and on Hillary Clinton that are outrageous and unwarranted and have taken place since Bill was a governor in Arkansas. On the other hand, the policies of the Clinton administration were in many ways very unfortunate for the American people. I guess we're going to let you go, though. Thank you very much for the call.
Her policies as Secretary of State also have magnified some of those inequities.
I agree.
Indeed.
Good day.
Particularly her backing of the disastrous intervention in Libya.
Really?
I think that was bad judgment. But all right, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, alternative radio scholar and activist Tom Mayer speaks on, is the U.S. an imperialist nation? At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints, journalist and historian Gilbert Doctorow discusses the aftermath of the Brussels bombing, as well as its underlying causes. Also, excerpts from a new speech by Bernie Sanders after his recent caucus victories. At 11 on Stage Studio, D. May Roberts features Profile Theater's production of The Blue Door by Tanya Barfield. We'll hear from director Bobby Bermeja and actor Seth Rue. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews artists Dana Lynn Lewis and Vanessa Renwick, who both have work in shows at the Portland Art Museum.
You know, I know Vanessa and I like her work a lot. I just want to throw that out there.
Cool. All right. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio, on your internet tubes. You can listen at KBOO.FM. You can call the show at 503-231-8187. Who's up, Steve? Franny, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, how are you?
Doing well. So I just wanted to, just a quick comment that I'd like you to discuss, because no one seems to be discussing this point, but the narrative that the Republican establishment hates Trump doesn't quite square with me, because the establishment owns the media, such as Clear Channel. Mm-hmm. So if they wanted to turn off that fat mouth, then they could. So, and I understand that it's about money, but no pun intended, power trumps money. So what's it really all about?
Well, I think it's really all about money. They may not like his politics, And they may not like the fact that they can't seem to rein him in or stand in the way of his eventual nomination. But at the same time, reporting on Trump brings a lot of eyeballs to your TV screens or to your pages or to your internet
pages. No, I know that.
Pages.
But I know that. But if you but if you own the media and you want to get rid of him, you just turn him off. I mean, you take the loss. You've already made so much money on the guy. So, you know, it doesn't that narrative, like so many of the narratives that were fed these days, doesn't really work out. On another subject, I do think it's really interesting the momentum that Bernie Sanders is gaining, you know, without that backing of the media. I mean, that's pretty astounding, and I think that's probably what they're much more afraid of.
Well, I think you're probably right about that. I think that the assumptions that were made prior to Sanders entering the race saw a certainty of candidacy by Clinton. And Clinton is, I think, the establishment candidate, neither right nor left in that sense. And I think that suddenly we have a guy who is talking about things that are true about America that need to be changed. Now, Bernie Sanders, to my mind, has never figured out, and this reflects I think his age and I think of his situation, he's never figured out how to reach out to minority communities effectively. Now, maybe he can change that narrative, but so far I haven't seen any indication of it.
I just think, I mean, the takeaway that I want to leave you and the other listeners with, at least from my perspective here in my kitchen, is take all of these narratives with a grain of salt, including the one that the Republican establishment doesn't like Donald Trump.
Good advice.
That's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. So we're talking about the we began with my reprising a piece I wrote for the Oregonian back in 92. I'm very proud of it. I probably shouldn't be so egotistical, but it predicted, I think, pretty accurately where we're at.
Yeah, I think you got that one. Spot on, actually.
Yeah.
Well done.
Of course, in those days, the Oregonian was a real newspaper, and it paid people like me to write things that didn't agree with its policies. Amazing.
And so the lack of that sort of locally based commentary is one of the casualties of the decline of newspapers in general, you'd say.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And when you look at the local news reporting, coin or
on television,
it's disgusting. It's always complimentary to the establishment, and it never really probes issues.
Speaking of the establishment media, the previous caller opined that if the establishment really disliked Donald Trump, then they would stop pointing their cameras at him, essentially. That's true, I suppose, but I really hope that doesn't happen. I think that's undemocratic. We may not agree with Donald Trump. He might scare a lot of us, but he is a legitimate candidate for president. And to enforce a news blackout on him, I don't think is the way to go.
Well, we've
already seen the Sanders campaign suffer from a similar sort of blackout.
Yeah, that's true. But I also think that... you know, what do they say in the television news business? If it bleeds, it leads. Essentially, Donald Trump is the exciting guy. He says stupid things.
Yeah.
Nobody really counters the stupid things. I assume that when the dust settles and there's a Republican and a Democratic candidate, the debate will, if it is Trump, will continue in a more direct way. I also think that... the senator from Texas is the scarier of the two candidates.
Yeah,
Cruz is really, I'm sorry, Cruz is really crazy weird.
Let's go back to the phones. Who do we have next, Steve? Tim, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Fine. How are you, sir?
Good. Hey, okay, I agree. Cruz is loco, man. He's crazy. He's evil.
But he's mean. You got to love that.
Yeah, really mean. You can see it in his voice. It, like, drips venom sometimes. Anyways, I in no way would I ever vote for Trump, but it is curious that he's the only one that proposes a neutral stand in the Israel-Palestinian thing and would give them at least a chance at a just solution, right? I mean, that's Hillary. She might as well be president of Israel. She wants to give them everything. And Hillary I believe, has proven that she's a failure as a Secretary of State. And the proof of that is Honduras. She supposedly, as Secretary of State, she would defend democratic regimes, countries in the world, but she supported the military coup in Honduras. And as a result of that, the death squad started. That's why we had like 30,000 Hondurans come into the United States, because of what she did in Honduras.
Well, so I agree. I think that's a significant point.
Yeah. So why should we support her? I don't know what I'm going to do. I mean, I'm definitely for Bernie. But if he doesn't get on, and Hillary's the nominee, and well, that, Trump's the other one, crap, man, we're screwed.
Well, that's the unfortunate progressive dilemma that we seem to find ourselves in every 4 years.
Well, yeah, but you know what's interesting about the Bernie campaign is that it's caught fire with younger people powerful way.
Overwhelmingly.
And I suspect, assuming these people actually turn out to vote, that it could change the whole narrative. And that's exciting.
Well, what about us old hippies? You know, I mean, I think he's fired the old 60s crowd, 70s crowd.
Well, it's an interesting possibility, and I appreciate it very much. I'm really glad, at the very least, that we have a discourse that is sane on the Democratic Party side.
Yeah, thank God. Thank the God I don't believe in.
Okay, man.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye.
All right, who's next, Steve? Tim, good morning. Nope. Who's next? 503-231-8187. Chris, good morning. Nope.
They're all hanging up.
I guess we answered everyone's question.
Yeah, it's all over.
Our work here is
they're
done.
Impatient.
You can also write into the program if you like, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or to the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. Let's try those telephone lines one more time. 503-231-8187. Who's next, Steve? Don, good morning. Hello. Well, we seem to be having a little trouble with the phones this morning.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Well, don't give up. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this program.
I don't mind talking about some of the stuff just without
Please,
the callers.
Sir,
I
mean, the floor is yours.
I want to go back to what I wrote in 92. I really think that what we have, and I've used this term quite a bit, what we really have is friendly fascism. You're not expecting a knock on your door. You're not expecting a concentration camps for the vast majority of opposition people. You're not expecting any of the phenomena that typified the Nazi regime. However, when Hitler rose, the assumption of the ruling class was that they could control him, that they could make him do their bidding. And it turned out that what he did while making them richer was far beyond any expectation of the ruling class in Germany. And it led eventually to an enormous disaster. Now, the other irony of all that is, at the end of the war, at the end of all of this, Western Germany was still the state of the very wealthy who had essentially created the Hitler menace. So that's really important to understand.
That is important to understand. Oh, well, let's try these phones again. Sunny, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi. You know, you guys, I do enjoy your discussions. I think you're engaging. I think you're lively. I think you are smart. But man, I got to tell you, I think you epitomize the section of KBOO that's got its head up. Hey, Trump. Trump's been endorsed by a strong, proud KKK guy. Have you got any KKK experience in your family history? And then we got Sanders, who's running.
Well, I'm Jewish, so that ain't going to happen.
Okay. Well, wait a second, though. They're rising, and they've also got connection to street-level gangs that push on people. We're experiencing it right now with a white supremacist gang that is giving us so much trouble across, 30 months of trouble. But the thing about it is...
Wait, well, who are you referring to there? Let's be clear.
Oh, there's many, many sections of white supremacy into the different gangs. It's not just a minority element of Hispanic people or black people. There's plenty of white work within the gangs going on, no doubt. You don't get much attention to it. But pardon me, I am sorry. That's true. If you have a Jewish background, then you are definitely going to have to keep your eye on the KKK. And people do have to keep their eye on them because they are coming up real fast, and they've been working on it behind closed doors across the internet for quite a while.
That's true.
They think that they've got the show, especially with all these bad cops, but there are also still lots and lots and lots of good cops. I will always say that as long as I can see it. And so I back off. I'll calm down, but I'm just saying, we would not have seen in 1992 a candidate walking around proudful of endorsement from these cowards. These terrorists, like Teresa, always sums them up. They are domestic terrorists.
They are. But let me ask you this. Yes. You characterized this at the outset of your call as epitomizing that segment of KABU with our heads where the sun don't shine.
Yeah, sorry.
No, that's quite all right. That's lively radio. But I think we've been pretty clear about calling out why we think Trump is dangerous and why he represents a threat to democracy as we understand it. Is that naive of us?
Well, I think we've got to always bring that into the discussion. Domestic terrorism of their ilk, it's got to be brought up. There he is. Look right at it. You know, look right at it. And the other thing about it is I do believe KABU packs around quite a bit of isms, targetisms, racisms, and all sorts of stuff. And I think that when we bring it out and into the light of day, we are, you know, heartening other people that notice this to come forward and say something about it or to stop putting up with it. I think KABU's got a lot of problems.
Okay, well, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
503-231-8187. Mark writes into the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AbeandJoe. Paul Krugman describes Paul Ryan as a con man with a reverse Robin Hood tax policy who stylizes himself as a deficit fighter. How nice to live in a Sanders landslide time. The landslide time is also an erasure time, a time when we let the con men and con women play their self-destruction. The Republicans, with their obstructionism, hatred, and buffoonery, give Sanders an easy victory.
Well, I think in part that's true. I mean, I'm not enamored of the mono arguments, the two or three issues that Sanders plays hard on. They're good issues, and I agree with them. I just think he has not developed a strategy that really addresses the very important situation of, for example, Black Lives Matter. And I think he, in a way, kind of was a little behind the curve when that first appeared. And I don't know that he can appeal to the African American community, largely a churched community in terms of voters, and largely very much enamored with the Clintons as people who are perceived as favorable to the African American community. What's really ironic is that what happened to poor people, disproportionately, unfortunately, persons of color, under the original Clinton administration, was a real disaster. And I don't think that's fully appreciated within those communities. Hmm. So it's kind of a weird situation. I wish Bernie would add more on that subject. I heard his speech. I can't remember the most recent speech that I heard. He didn't get to the place of asserting the importance of the African American diaspora and of the horrible treatment that was characteristic of slavery.
Yeah, I think Mark's description of this as a Sanders landslide period is not accurate.
Well, I don't know.
He's trailing in the fight for the Democratic nomination.
Well, but the structure of the Democratic Party makes him trail.
Yeah, that's true. That's another discussion entirely. Let's go back to the phones. Don, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
What's on your mind?
Well, your question was, I think you're naive to just believe that there's only one side to Trump. And... but, you know, he says a lot of things, and he says a lot of things, you know, and the president's got to get the stupid vote, and he's got to get the smart vote, and he says a lot of stupid things to get the stupid vote.
There's many sides to Trump. There's a downside and several other downsides.
Oh, well, yeah, and he does, as a successful, smart businessman, I guess billionaire, he doesn't fight a futile fight. You know, he recognizes the difference.
Well, you do understand he started out a millionaire, and you do understand that he has a notorious reputation as a chiseler. So, I mean,
no, I understand all that.
Okay,
but the solve, yeah, the troubleshooter, the solve for solving terrorism, for instance, came out with as a right answer for me.
What was that?
Well, he was interviewed, I think, by Judy Woodworth for NPR, and he says that the resolve to terrorism is, you know, the Islamic State, the Muslims or the Islams, Islamists have a deep down hatred for us.
You believe that?
No. This is what he said.
Okay.
And he says, now we've got to find out why and solve why they have this deep down hatred for us. And that, you know, and that for me was the correct answer.
Yeah, but I think the solution to that particular question in this particular modern context is one word: Iraq.
Well, I think it goes a little deeper than that. But
no, it goes a lot of goes a lot of deeper. And if you hold the leverage, as Trump does hold the leverage, because he's an outsider, he can basically, the powerful politician is all about not just leverage but blackmail. Who can blackmail who, or who can practice the most extortion on who, and that's how, you know, that's how they operate. And he comes in as an outsider with probably a very strong card, or probably the strongest card, and Obama held that card at one time, and he traded it away for whatever, maybe health care or something like that.
Well, you brought up Obama. I think that there were many weaknesses in the Obama administration, one of which was that he really hadn't had enough experience and wasn't enough of a player, and that's ironic, in the system. But also, let's not forget that a Republican Congress has made it virtually impossible to do almost anything in the way of services for human beings, in the way of improvements of our society. It's a very weird
situation.
Okay,
well, I'll ask you a question, then. What do you think this leverage is? What do you think the leverage is?
What leverage? I'm sorry.
The leverage that a politician can come into office, let's say the presidency, and change the game.
I think the leverage is usually on the president, usually applied by those people who've contributed to his or her campaign.
I think it's the sins of the past, original sin, or something that the establishment is hiding in the closet.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Bye. Thank you very much for the call. Corey writes into the Facebook page to say, great show. I disagree with Joe about Bernie and minority candidates. Many black and Latino thinkers are making a case for Sanders' democratic socialism.
Well, I noticed that.
And its potential to address structural racism as an alternative. As far as Hillary, I, even in my 30s, may still be a super predator. Half Superman, half predator, but 100% awesome. I think Corey wins the show today. Well played, Corey.
What? I don't even know what that means.
I don't either. Let's take another phone call. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. How exciting that the people are way ahead of the government and way ahead of the media. Sanders is really a great New Deal advocate,
uh-huh.
A great Roosevelt person. He criticizes Pfizer, which is a pharmaceutical company that's trying to merge with an Ireland company to evade $35 billion of taxes. This is quite a corrupt business model. And this is the real problem, that, you know, redistribution has been going from bottom to top, and with Sanders, it changes radically. And, you know, companies like Apple, Google, Boeing, They've shifted tens of billions of dollars to tax havens, or they've created dummy corporations. To me, language and democracy are up for debate, and the survival of the species. It's Sanders versus the con men and con women.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned survival of species, because Sanders, as far as I know, is the only candidate directly dealing with climate change.
Yes.
And I think that's an incredibly important thing, and being ignored constantly by the media, who underplay it or don't really seem to understand it.
And truthfulness wins out. This is so exciting. Despite all the odds, despite all the billions,
mm-hmm.
Truth wins out, because we've been so deceived.
Well, on that note,
yeah,
We'll on that note, we're going to let you go, and we're going to go. And we want to all thank you all for calling us and using the internet to reach us. And we want to urge you to keep tuned to KBOO, which I want to emphasize once again has the best in music programming, not to mention the best in public affairs in the universe.
The universe. We'll be back at you next week.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, on Thursday, April 14th at 7 p.m., KBOO at the Clinton will show Who Are My People? Who Are My People is a documentary film which follows four Native American elders as they seek to preserve cultural resources, including large geoglyphs, from the building of renewable energy facilities in California's Mojave Desert. Director Robert Lundahl will be in attendance. Again, that's Who Are My People, Thursday, April 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, scholar and activist Tom Mayer speaks on, is the U.S. an imperial nation? At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, journalist and historian Gilbert Doctorow discusses the aftermath of the Brussels bombing as well as its underlying causes. Also, excerpts from a new speech by Bernie Sanders after his recent caucus.